remember the warm welcome you gave me and Gordon at conference after our wedding. And I'm so proud that every day I see him motivated to work for the best interests of people all around the country.
Thank goodness Sarah and I are a team. I'm very proud to be her husband. Now let's come straight to the point. I want to talk with you today about who I am, what I believe, what I'm determined to lead this party and this great country to achieve. As we gather here today, I know people have real concerns about the future of the country, about the future of the economy, and people in this hall have concerns about the future of our party too. And so I want to answer your questions directly, to talk with you how, amidst all the present difficulties, we should be more confident than ever that we can build what I want to talk to you about today, a new settlement for new times, a fair Britain for the new age. But let me start with something I hope you know already. I didn't come into politics to be a celebrity or thinking I would always be popular. Perhaps that's just as well. No, 25 years ago, I asked the people of Fife to send me to Parliament to serve the country I love. And I didn't come to London because I wanted to join the establishment, but because I wanted to, and I want to, change it. So I'm not going to try to be something I'm not. And if people say I'm too serious, quite honestly, there's a lot to be serious about. I'm serious about doing a serious job for all the people of this country. You know what angers me and inspires me to act is when people are treated unfairly. So when people share with me stories about the hard time they're having with bills, I want to help, because I was brought up seeing my parents having to juggle their budget like all the rest of us. And when I talk to parents about schools, I'm determined that every child should have a good school, because while I got a break in a great local secondary, not all my friends got the chance to get on. And when I speak to victims of crime, I get angry. Like them, I know the difference between right and wrong. So here I am, working for this incredible country, while trying as far as possible to give my young children an ordinary childhood. Some people have been asking why I haven't served my children up for spreads in the papers. My answer is simple. My children aren't props, they're people. And you know where I've made mistakes? I'll put my hand up and try to put them right. So what happened with 10 pence? It stung me because it really hurt that suddenly people felt I wasn't on the side of people on middle and modest incomes. Because on the side of hardworking families is the only place I've ever wanted to be. And from now on, I tell you, it is the only place I ever will be. And so, I want to give the people of this country an unconditional assurance. No ifs, no buts, no small print. My unwavering focus is taking this country through the challenging economic circumstances we face and building the fair society of the future. You know, the British people would not forgive us if at this time we looked inwards to the affairs of just our party, when our duty is the interests of the whole country. The people of Britain would never forget if we failed to put them first. And friends, they are right. Now, because this is a time of greater change than ever around us, it must be a time of higher ambition from us. And because the world of 2008 is now so different from the world we knew in 1997, I want to talk today about the new settlement we must build for these new times. You know, each generation believes it's living through changes their parents could never have imagined. But the collapse of banks, the credit crunch, the trebling of oil prices, the speed of technology, the rise of Asia, nobody now can be in any doubt that we're in a different world, and it's now the global age. You know, in truth, we haven't seen anything happening like this since the Industrial Revolution. The last week will be studied by our children in the schools. As the week the world was spun on its axis, and old certainties were turned on their heads. And in these uncertain times, we must be, we will be, the rock of stability and fairness upon which people can stand. And friends, you know, it's a calling that summons us, because in every time of profound change, those with great wealth and privilege have always been able to look after themselves. But our duty, what gives us moral purpose, is serving the people who need us most, Britain's vast majority, people on middle and modest incomes, who need to know that they are not on their own amidst this change. We are on their side. Where there are new risks and new pressures on people, our duty is and will be security for all. And where there are new opportunities, our duty is and will be fair chances for all, matched by fair rules applied to all. And ensuring people against the new risks and empowering people with these new opportunities is the mission of the hour. And you know, those who say that government should walk away when people face these risks and need these opportunities, they will be judged to be on the wrong side of history. And when the country is asking their government to meet these new challenges, I say to our opponents that those who don't believe in the potential of government shouldn't be trusted to form one. This is a defining moment for us. It's a test not just of our judgment, but of our values. Today, once again, we are called to apply our enduring beliefs to completely new conditions. You know, New Labour has always been at its best when we've applied our values to changing times. In the 1990s, Tony and I asked you to change policy to meet new challenges. We are and will always be pro-enterprise, pro-business and pro-competition as a government. And we believe the dynamism of our 5 million businesses, large and small, is vital to the success of our country. But the continuing market turbulence shows why we now need a new settlement for these times, a settlement that we as a pro-market party must pursue, a settlement where the rewards are for what really matters: hard work, effort, and enterprise. A settlement where both markets and governments are seen to be the servants of the people, not their masters. And it's a settlement where what counts is not the pursuit of any sectional interest, but the advancement of the public interest, where at all times we will put people first. Now, let us be clear, the modern role of government is not to provide everything, but it must be to enable everyone. And just as we know that governments cannot and should not do everything, so too we know markets cannot deliver it all on their own. And just as those who supported the dogma of big government were proved wrong, so too those who argue for the dogma of unbridled free market forces have been proved wrong again. And so it falls to this party and to this government, with our commitment both to fairness and to business, to propose and deliver what, after recent events, everybody should now be willing to accept, that we do all it takes to stabilise the still turbulent financial markets, and then in the months ahead, we do nothing less than rebuild the world financial system and around clear principles. And friends, the work begins now. Tomorrow, I and then Alistair will meet financial and government leaders in America to make these proposals. First, transparency. All transactions need to be transparent and never hidden. Secondly, sound banking, a requirement to demonstrate that risks can be managed and priced for bad and good times. Thirdly, responsibility. No member of a bank's board should be able to say they did not understand the risk they were running and walk away from them. Fourth, integrity, removing conflicts of interest, so that bonuses should not be based on short-term speculative deals, but should be a reward for hard work, effort, and enterprise. And fifth, global standards and global supervision. Because the flows of capital are global, then supervision can no longer be national. It has to be global too. And if we make these changes, I believe London will retain its rightful place as the financial centre of the world. And we know that the challenges we face in this new global age, they didn't begin in the last week or in the last month, but in fact reflect deeper changes that are happening in our world. For all its benefits, the global age has revealed not just financial instability, but another major pressure that's hitting everyone. There's a rising global population demanding more energy too. So the new settlement also requires another great and historic endeavour to end the dictatorship of oil and to avert catastrophic climate change. And the new settlement therefore must mean a transformation in our use of energy, new nuclear power, an unprecedented increase in renewables, and investment in clean coal. And I'm now asking the Climate Change Committee to report by October on the case for, by 2050, not a 60% reduction in our carbon emissions, but 80% cut. And I want British companies and British workers to seize the opportunity and lead the world in the transformation to a low-carbon economy. And I believe we can create, in modern green manufacturing and services, 1 million new jobs. But you know, it's not just our duty, it's our basic philosophy that we do everything we can to help families through the world downturn fairly. And while the Conservatives did nothing to help people with their gas and electricity bills in the last world downturn, this winter, millions of people will receive the help with heating bills, insulation, social tariffs, help they never received from the Conservatives. But you know, when it comes to public spending, you can't just wave a magic wand to conjure up the money, not even with the help from Harry Potter. So there are tough choices, and I have to say, as a result of events of recent months, we will have to make new priorities, tougher choices, and we will have to make and prioritise what is necessary for the future. There are going to be tougher choices, and we will have to make them. And just as families have to make economies to make ends meet, so this government must and will ensure that we get value for money out of every single pound off your money. And I say to you, we will invest it wisely. Continuing through the downturn, a record investment in schools, Sure Start centres, transport and hospitals. And you know, if we make the right decisions to take people through this world downturn and do so fairly, we will find that despite the turbulent troubles, Britain's firms and British workers can reap the rewards of a world economy that whatever happens is set to double in size. And with Britain's great assets, our stability, our openness, our scientific genius, our creative industries, yes, our English language too, I know that this can be a British century, and I'm determined it will be. But my argument today is that the new settlement for the global age must do even more to empower people with new opportunities and to ensure people against the new risks, and as a result, value hard work, effort, and enterprise. It's the economy, of course, that's been making the headlines, but other big changes are happening too. You know, people feel their communities are changing before their eyes, and it's increasing their anxiety about crime and antisocial behaviour. And so we will be the party of law and order. And for the first time ever, we've got more British pensioners than there are British children, more people living longer on fixed incomes and worried about whether they'll need long-term care. So we will be the party that delivers security and dignity for all pensioners. And you know, there are new pressures on parents, worrying about balancing work and family life, but also about advertising aimed straight at their children and what their children are watching or downloading from the internet. And so we will be the party of the family. And so the new settlement for our times will show how Britain can meet all these challenges. And it's more than about a fair prosperity, it must be about fair chances and fair rules too. You know, some people say that there's an inevitable political cycle in this country, as sure as night follows day. I don't agree. The challenge of these new times demands a truly progressive government to help people cope with the new risks and make the most of these new opportunities. And that's why I believe now more than ever, even more than in 1997, this country needs a Labour government. You know, to govern is to choose, and it's what a government chooses to do when it's tested that demonstrates its priorities and reveals its heart. And it's not the arithmetic of statistics, but the fabric of people's lives. You know, when we talk about 3 million more people in work since 1997, that's not just a number, that's a life that's been changed 3 million times over. That's the young woman laid off in the mid-90s, who's now built a booming business of her own. 3 million new jobs, not by accident, but by our actions. And in the years to come, we will demonstrate again the real power of Labour to change people's lives. You know, when we talk about the 1 million small and medium-sized businesses, 1 million set up in the last 11 years, that's not just a number. That's the entrepreneur who can treat her parents to a summer holiday. It's the local businessman who's taken on 2 local teenagers as apprentices. 1 million new businesses, demonstrating again the real power of Labour to change people's lives. And when we talk about 1 million people benefiting from New Labour's minimum wage, that's not just a number. That's a dad doing security shifts who can now afford a birthday party for his child. It's a mum who doesn't have to go to a loan shark to pay for her kids' Christmas. 1 million people freed from exploitation and now with the minimum wage rising year on year, that's the real power of Labour to change lives. And you know, when we talk about the 240,000 lives that are saved by the progress Labour's NHS has made in fighting cancer and heart disease, that's not just a number. That's the dad who lives to walk his daughter up the aisle. It's the gran who is there to clap and cry at her grandson's graduation. 240,000 families still together, and now thousands more with new and better treatments from an expanding NHS. We're changing the world the only way it can really ever change. One life, one family, one hope at a time. That's the real power of Labour to change lives. And why? And why? And why do we always strive for fairness? Not because it makes good sound bites, not because it gives good photo opportunities, not because it makes for good PR. No, we do it because fairness is in our DNA. It's who we are. It's what we're for. It's why Labour exists. It's our first instinct. It's the soul of our party. It's why when things get tough, we get tougher. We stand and we fight hard for fairness. We don't give in and we never will. And you know, for me, fairness is treating others how we would be treated ourselves. So it isn't levelling down, it's empowering people to aspire and reach ever higher. And to take advantage of all the opportunities of the global economy, I want to unleash in this country a new wave of rising social mobility across our country. You know, for too long, we've developed only some of the talents of some people, but the modern route to social mobility is developing all the talents of all the people. And that's helping those who are working their way up from very little. It's lifting up those in the middle who want to get on. It means supporting what really matters: hard work, effort, and enterprise. This is not just the new economic necessity. It's the modern test of social justice. It's the radical centre ground we occupy and we will expand. And fairness is why Harriet Harman is introducing the first ever Equalities Bill. And let me thank her for her tireless work as Deputy Leader of our party. Fairness is why Ed Miliband is ensuring that community and third sector organisations can play their proper part in every neighbourhood of our country. And it's why our whole party is leading the fight against the British National Party. And fairness. It's why John Denham is extending university access, why Ruth Kelly has introduced for the first time free bus travel for pensioners, why John Hutton and our Labour members of the European Parliament, whom we want re-elected, are fighting to free agency workers from the scourge of exploitation. But fairness for the future also means a big change that I want to explain today. We have always stood for public services that are universal and available to all. Now we must stand for public services that are not only universal and available to all, but personal to each. And for me, the fairer future starts with putting children first. The biggest investment in the country's history in children that we have ever seen. In 1997, you know, there were no Sure Start centres and nursery education for only the few. Today, with Beverly Hughes leading as Children's Minister, there are children's centres opening in every community in our country to serve 3 million children, and there is now free nursery education for 3- and 4-year-olds. But our ambitions must be greater. Children's services tailored to the needs of every child. And I want Britain to take its place among the leading nations in preschool services. So I pledge here today in Manchester that starting in over 30 communities and then over 60, we will stage by stage extend free nursery places for 2-year-olds to every parent who wants them in every part of the country. And we will back that. And that will be backed by high quality, affordable childcare for all. That's the fairness parents want, and that's the fairness every Labour Party member will go out and fight for. And because child poverty demeans Britain, we have committed our party to tackle and to end it. The measures we have taken this year alone will help lift 250,000 children out of poverty. The economic times are tough, of course. That makes things harder. But we are in this for the long haul, the complete elimination of child poverty by 2020. And so today, I announce my intention to introduce groundbreaking legislation to enshrine in the law of the land Labour's pledge to end child poverty. And Ed Balls and I will never excuse, explain away, or tolerate low standards in education. So we will keep up the pace of reform, more academies, trusts and specialist schools, more of the brightest and best graduates becoming teachers, more investment in building schools for the future, state-of-the-art schools for world-class schooling. And fairness demands nothing less than excellence in every school for every child. So today I guarantee to parents two fundamental rights, because every child should leave primary school able to read, write and count. Any child who falls behind will not be left behind, but now will have a new guaranteed right to personal catch-up tuition. And because all parents in our country should see their children taught in schools which achieve good results at GCSEs, our pledge today is that any parent whose local school falls below the expected standard will have the right to see that school transformed under wholly new leadership or closed and new school places provided. And And we want to prepare our children for the future and enable all families to use the internet to link back to their children's school. So Jim Knight, the Schools Minister, is announcing today we will fund over 1 million extra families to get online on the way to our ambition of Britain leading the world with more of our people than any other major economy able to actively participate in our broadband and internet future. And now, as we celebrate the 60th anniversary of the National Health Service, let me, on behalf of all of us here and all the people of the country, thank all the National Health Service staff, the cooks and cleaners, the paramedics and porters, the doctors and midwives and nurses. You have served our country and serve a great ideal, the principle that in a fair society, healthcare should not be a commodity to be bought, but a right to be enjoyed by all. And we know that Labour is the party of the NHS. We created it, we saved it, we valued it, and we will always support it. And you know already that for me, this isn't a political agenda, but a personal mission. Last year when we were in Bournemouth, I told you how when I was 16, I got injured playing rugby and lost the sight forever in my left eye. And I knew I couldn't play football or rugby again, but I could still read. But what I didn't tell you last year was that then, one morning, I woke up and realized my sight was going in my good eye. And I had to have another operation and lay in the darkness for days on end. At that point, my future was books on tape. But thanks to the NHS, my sight was saved by care my parents could never have afforded. And so it's precisely because I know and have heard from others about the miraculous difference a great surgeon and great nurses and great care can make that I'm so passionate about the values of the NHS and so committed to warming it to serve these values. That's why in just 1 year, in the fight against hospital infections, we have doubled the number of matrons and we've achieved a 36% reduction in MRSA. And let us remember what a Labour government has now achieved: the lowest ever waiting times in the whole history of the National Health Service. And now, to respond to the new aspirations and the higher aspirations, we want to make the National Health Service more personal to people's needs. More patients more involved in their own healthcare, with more choice and more control than ever before. And I've always found it unfair that we cannot offer on the NHS the services, the comprehensive services that private patients can afford if they have the money to buy it. And so in April, a Labour Britain will become the first country in the whole world to offer free universal checkups for everyone who's over 40. And I say also, there is no vested interest. There is no vested interest, no matter how powerful, that we are not prepared to take on when change is needed for the sake of the nation's health. We've already made it easier for busy families to go to the doctor. A year ago, only 1 in 10 patients had access to GPs at weekends and in the evenings. Now, almost half of all practices are open, and by the end of next year, the majority will be open even longer. And today I want to show how this government will pursue what I believe to be one of the noblest and boldest contributions of this country to our shared human fortunes. You know, since the war, nearly one-third of Britain's Nobel Prizes have been for our genius in medicine. We should now aspire to stretch the boundaries of human knowledge and human health ever further. I want Britain to lead the world in beating the diseases which cause such heartbreak for families. Over the last few years, we've made major breakthroughs in research relevant to cancer, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's and strokes, and many more. But these are yet to be turned into treatments from which we can all benefit. So let me tell you today that the unprecedented £15 billion we are investing in medical research will be directed to turning the major advances of the last few years into actual treatments and cures for NHS patients. And over the next decade, we can lead the way in beating cancer and other diseases, a great endeavour worthy of a great country, proud because we have a health service focused on 21st century needs. Now, an NHS that is available to all and personal to each means meeting another challenge of the future. Offering for the first time every patient with a long-term condition their own care plan. But alongside new patient responsibilities, there will be new rights. And because we know that almost every British family has been touched by cancer, Alan Johnson and I know we must do more to relieve the financial worry that so often goes alongside the heartache. So I can announce today that for those in our nation battling cancer, from next year, they will not pay prescription charges at all. This, you know, is not the limit of our commitment to a fair NHS in a fair society, as over the next few years, the NHS generates the cash savings we're going to create in its drug budget. We will plough savings back into abolishing charges for all patients with long-term conditions. That's the fairness patients want, the fairness every Labour Party member will go out and fight for. You know, in a fair society, the fact that older people are living longer should be a blessing for the families and not a burden. We are committed to linking pensions to earnings. And I'm proud that we'll now be implementing for the first time the equality for women in the retirement. No one should live in fear of their old age because they worry their social care will impose financial burdens they can never afford to face. And the minute they need care puts the family home at risk. The generation that rebuilt Britain from the ashes of the war deserves better. And so I can tell you today that Alan Johnson and I will also bring forward new plans to help people to stay longer in their own homes and provide greater protection against the cost of care, dignity and hope for everyone in their later years. That's the fairness older people deserve and the fairness every Labour Party member will go out and fight for. So when people say, in these tough times, there's nothing we can do, there's nothing higher to aim for, no great causes left that are worth fighting for, my reply is our ideas are the ideas that will realise the hopes of families for a better future. Providing free nursery care for more children is a cause worth fighting for. Providing better social care for older people who need it is a cause worth fighting for. Delivering excellence in every single school is a cause worth fighting for. Universal checkups and new help to fight cancer, these are all causes worth fighting for. This is the future we're fighting for. And in this world of vast economic and social change, new opportunity for all must be matched also with a new responsibility from all. Our aim is a something for something, nothing for nothing Britain, a Britain of fair chances for all and fair rules applied to all. So our policy is that everyone who can should work. That's why James Purnell has introduced reforms so that apart from genuine cases of illness, the dole is only for those looking for work or actively preparing for it. That's only fair to the people pulling their weight in every part of the country. And let me be clear also about our new Labour policy on crime. Taking action on the causes of crime will never again mean indulging those who perpetrate it. Fairness demands that we both punish and prevent. And so Jackie Smith and Jack Straw are introducing a landmark reform in our justice system to put victims first. In consultation with victim support, we will create an independent commissioner who will stand up for victims, for witnesses and families, the people the courts and police exist to serve. And justice seen is justice done. So you'll be seeing more neighbourhood policing on the street, hearing more about verdicts from our courts, able to see the people who offended doing community payback, which will be what it says, hard work for the public benefit at the places and times the public can see it. That's only fair to the law-abiding majority of our country. And nobody in Britain should get to take more out of the system than they're willing to put in. I'm proud that Britain will honour our obligations to provide refuge from persecution. And we recognise the great contribution that migrants make to our economy and to our society. But the other side of welcoming newcomers who can help Britain is being tough about excluding those adults who won't and can't. And that's why we've introduced the Australian-style points-based system, the citizenship test, the English language test, and we will introduce a migrant charge for public services. That's only fair to the public who play by the rules and to new citizens who uphold our rules. So across the board, we will create rules that reward those who play by them and punish those who don't. That's what fairness means to me. You know, our party, so often in our history, has been home to the big ideas. Ideas later taken for granted, but revolutionary in the time. Just think, the vote for working men, and then for women, the National Health Service, legal protection from race and sex discrimination. These are no longer just Labour policies. These are established British values. They are the common sense of our age because of what the Labour Party has done. You know, and we should never forget one thing, that every single blow we have struck for fairness and for the future has been bitterly opposed by the Conservative Party. Just think where our country would be if we'd listened to them. No paternity leave, no New Deal, no Bank of England independence, no Sure Start, no devolution, no civil partnerships, no minimum wage, no investment in the NHS, no new nurses, no new police, no new schools. So let's hear no more from the Conservatives. We did fix the roof while the sun was shining. Just think if we'd taken their advice on the global financial crisis. Their policy was to let Northern Rock fold and imperil the whole financial system. Our Labour government saved Northern Rock, so not a single UK depositor lost out. Their policy said, in this week of all weeks, that speculative short selling should continue. We acted decisively to end reckless speculation. And you know, the Conservative policy would mean that at this very moment, there would be no regulation at all to protect homeowners. We are the party protecting homeowners' rights in this country. And do you know what their Shadow Chancellor really said last week? In the week that banks were collapsing, the man who wants to run our economy not only said, this is not a problem caused by the financial markets, but he went on to say, and I quote, that it's a function, yes, that it's a function of financial market that people make loads of money out of the misery of others. Just imagine where we'd be if they'd been in a position to implement their beliefs last week. No rescue of Northern Rock, no action on speculation, no protection for mortgages, doing nothing to stop banks closing or going under. What has become clear is that Britain cannot trust the Conservatives to run the economy. And I'm all in favour of apprenticeships. But let me tell you, this is no time for a novice. But I believe in giving credit where it's due. The Conservative leaders' team, they're smart, they've got a plan, and they're implementing it ruthlessly. Their strategy is to change their appearance, to give the appearance of change. And their strategy is to conceal what they really think. And when salesmen don't tell you what they're selling, it's because they're selling something they know no one would want to buy. But I'm a man for detail. And I've discovered some clues about what would be in store if we had a Conservative Britain. They want us to believe that, like us, they now care about public services. But when Mr. Cameron actually talks to his party about the spending plans for the services, he says the difference between Labour and Tory levels of public investment will be dramatic and fundamental. That means Tory public spending cuts. They want to tell us that we're all progressives now. But the day that Hazel Blears and Caroline Flint were announcing a £1 billion package to support millions of rural and urban homeowners, the Conservatives were confirming that the first tax priority is to take that £1 billion from hardworking families and hand it over to the 3,000 richest estates in Britain. And they want to tell us they now believe in investing in education, but they are committed to slashing £4.5 billion from the school building programme, axing the educational maintenance allowance that help poorer students, and opposing the education leaving age being raised to 18. And yes, friends, they would even take Sure Start from infants and their parents. One of our greatest gifts to the future, one of the first priorities for Tory spending cuts. And the Conservatives may want to represent the future, but whether it's their policy on Europe or on energy or on planning or on tax credits or university places or 42 days, whenever they are tested on substance, they have nothing to offer to meet the big challenges of tomorrow because they are still prisoners of their past. And so if you look beneath the surface, you'll see that the Conservatives may have changed their tune, but they haven't changed their minds. And the Conservatives say our country is broken. But I repeat, this country has never been broken by anyone or anything. This country, it wasn't broken by fascism, by the Cold War, by terrorists. And of course there are problems, but this is a country being lifted up every day by the people who love it. We've got 4 million people helping Neighbourhood Watch. We've got 6 million sports volunteers. We've got over 5 million people whom I pay tribute today who are doing amazing work as carers in our communities. And just as we celebrated our national triumph when we won the 2012 Olympic Games for London, so too Andy Burnham, Tessa, Jael and I, along with all of you, filled with pride this summer as our Olympic and Paralympic athletes showed British brilliance at its very best. That's why, for all the challenges, I don't believe Britain is broken. I think it's the best country in the world. I believe in Britain. And you know, stronger together, as England, Wales, Scotland and Northern Ireland, we can make our United Kingdom even better in the years to come. And as Sean Woodward said yesterday, we will work to complete the process of devolution in Northern Ireland. And ours is a country full of heroes, and we pay special tribute to the heroism of our armed forces. As Des Brown said yesterday, the service, the sacrifices in Iraq, in Afghanistan, and in peacekeeping missions around the globe, quite simply, the best armed forces in any part of the world. You know, the whole lesson of the new world I've been describing earlier is that we must work together to meet the great shared challenges vital to our future. And I tell you, what we do together for the poor and the vulnerable is an act of compassion, yes, but it is more than that. It is what will determine whether this new global society succeeds or fails. And unlike the Conservatives, who are extremists and isolationists on Europe, we will work with our partners in the European Union. And we will work with America to deal with the immediate security challenges, with Europe and America working together to deal with the challenges in Georgia and in Iran. And David Miliband, Douglas Alexander and I will do everything in our power to bring justice and democracy to Burma, to Zimbabwe, and to Darfur. And I promise you, I will work with other countries to bring a permanent settlement, a secure Israel, and a viable Palestine to deliver peace for the people of the Middle East. And later this week, at Britain's request, the United Nations has summoned the leaders of the world to a special summit on what we know is now a global poverty emergency. You know, in the museum in Rwanda, which commemorates the millions who lost their lives, as the world looked the other way, there's a picture of a young boy called David, a 10-year-old who was tortured to death. And his last words were, "Don't worry, the United Nations will come for us." But we never did. That child believed the best of us, only to discover that the pieties repeated so often meant in reality nothing at all. The words "never again" became just a slogan and not what it should be, the crucible in which our values are tested. I tell you, this Labour government will not allow the world to stand by as more than 30,000 children die today from diseases we know how to cure. And we will not pass by as 100 million men and women and children face a winter of starvation. So the poor will not go unheard tomorrow at the United Nations, because we, the British people, will speak up for them and speak up for justice. The fair society, fairness at home, fairness across the world. That's the new settlement for these new times. I know what I believe. I know who I am. I know what I want to do in this job. And I know that the way to deal with tough times is to face them down. Stay true to your beliefs. Understand that all the attacks, all the polls, all the headlines, all the criticism, it's all worth it if doing this job I make life better for one child, one family, and one community. Because this job is not about me, it's about you. And I'll tell you what else I've learned, that tough times don't weaken the determination of people who believe in what they're doing. Tough times strengthen our resolve. You know, when I talk to the people who do the tough jobs, nurses, teachers, police officers, soldiers, carers, so many people doing public service and other jobs, and when I talk to them about what they do, so often they say to me, "I do what I do because I want to make a difference." And doesn't each of us want to say of ourselves that I help someone in need, that I come to the aid of a neighbor in distress, that I will not pass by on the other side, that I will give off myself for something bigger than myself? And each of us can make a contribution, but you know, together we are even more than that. United, we are a great movement, led by hope, not fear, gathered person by person, one individual, then a few more, then hundreds, then thousands, then finally millions strong. A movement where I want each of us to be able to say to each other, "This is our country, Britain. We are building it together. Together we are making it greater. Together we are building the fair society in this place and in this generation." It's the mission of our times, the fair society, the cause that drives us on. And we will win, not for the sake of our party. Together we will win for the sake of our country. Thank you very much.